Is wokeness impacting even how we treat medical diseases? Monkeypox is our topic on this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Our guest is a former FDA official, and he serves as a Georgetown University health law professor. He's also a former Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate. His name is Rick Mehta, and that is spelled R-I-K-M-E-H-T-A. And I mention that because his website is rickmehta.com, R-I-K-M-E-H-T-A. Rick, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate that.
Jay, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so tell us about monkeypox, and I understand that there are some, because of political correctness, where perhaps they even want to try and change the name of monkeypox. So tell us about monkeypox.
Yeah, so monkeypox, this is not a new disease. It's been around for a better half of half a century. You know, it's become a federal public health emergency simply because of the failures of the Biden health department and the administration for properly preparing those particular groups of patients that would be highly susceptible to this. And we see in the New England Journal of Medicine that was published a report that over 98% of the cases have been found in most specifically in the polyamorous gay and bisexual male community. But, you know, the first signs of monkeypox we've seen in the Americas as early as 1970s or even before. So, again, unlike COVID, this is not a new disease. And the other, I think, important factor here is that this is what we call a zoonotic disease. That means the origins of this transmitted from animals to animals and then animals to humans. And then up until recently, we're seeing from human to human exposures and transmission as well. Whereas the human to human transmission is done mostly what we understand through prolonged skin to skin contact. And again, most notably among the gay and bisexual male community.
There have been some stories about children, or at least one or two or something like that, getting monkeypox. Would that be because then they were part of, you know, participating in, you know, some sort of gay sex or whatever, or maybe they were raped or something?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I think the most common form of transmission is through prolonged skin-to-skin contact. And even now, there's more information being collected that this may, in fact, be what we know as a sexually transmitted infection. At the end of the day, it's a rare infection and it's a rare disease. However, that is the most common way of transmission. That being said, there are other ways of getting monkeypox, so it'd be hard to figure out the exact determinant. You know, I'm a glass-half-full kind of guy. I'd like to think that that was not the case in terms of how these children were exposed. But again, it could just be as simple as, you know, prolonged skin-to-skin contact. I think the major issue here has been, and you kind of touched upon it, it's been semantics. You know, this is a disease and an infection, and whether we, you know, like it or not, it is somewhat discriminatory in that it has targeted specifically in terms of objective case numbers we've seen the gay and bisexual male community. And so because of that, there's been a lot of play on words by health departments and others where, you know, communicating objective information and being honest with people is one of the best ways of tackling a public health issue of this before it raises to the levels of an emergency. And even the New York Health Department refused to classify this as a sexually transmitted infection, despite objections by the director of epidemiology for the New York Health Department saying, please be honest and call it what it is and communicate to those that are the most susceptible, the most vulnerable. And so this really has been a failure by mostly Democrat-run public health departments failing the LGBTQIA community and not being honest with them in the early stages of when we saw this infection starting to spread in in the United States, really failing to call it exactly what it is. And that's notwithstanding, as you mentioned, the sort of racist stereotype wokeness that they're trying to tag on to the labeling and the name of it.
I'm not familiar with that. Can you tell us about that? That's basically, there are some who want to rename monkeypox. If so, why?
Yeah, you know, there is this discriminatory and stigmatizing notion that and unfortunately, and it's even hard for me to say, that people would consider referring to, you know, people of African American descent as monkeys, which I think is absolutely horrendous. It's something that is just, in my opinion, so laughable that you almost have to be racist to even think that notion.
In fact, let me interrupt you for 1 second. This is a biblically based radio station, and just to confirm what you just said, in the Bible, in fact, this was one of Martin Luther King's favorite quotes, and certainly his niece, Alveda King, who continues to proclaim and so forth in his name and so forth. But here's what that verse says. It's Acts chapter 17, verse 26. From one man, God made all the peoples of the earth. So ultimately, there's really only one race. It's the human race, and the different shades of color of skin that people have. But biblically, it is that way. Now, that doesn't mean some people who claim the mantle of the Bible have not been racist. Of course, that's not the case, unfortunately. But anyway, so go ahead and continue. I just want to lay that foundation from the Bible. But go ahead.
Well, no, Jerry, thank you for saying that. And that is so well put and so, you know, well understood. I think it's abhorrent to even think that there would be any connection, you know, between one skin color to an actual, you know, animal taxonomy. What I think objectively, as someone from, you know, background in public health and has been an expert in this area, you know, they're not thinking about the other impact that this could have in tackling the spread of this infection. When you change a name, you're changing surveillance departments. You're changing the way that it's being tracked, how it's being reported. Now, remember, this is also raised to the level of a public health emergency of international concern. So globally, you know, these countries, which mostly we're seeing higher cases in lower income countries, are having even a harder time, both from an expense, time and resource, to be able to do proper surveillance, so that those that need help can get it and that we can actually nip this virus in the bud. And so when you're playing around with the taxonomy and the nomenclature and the naming, you know, you have to think about the real impact it's going to have on our public health surveillance tools, and implementing such a name change could potentially set back the progress that's been made at actually tackling the virus, which, again, in my opinion, is the most important thing. So in this case, wokeness could actually impact stopping the spread of this disease.
So in other words, wokeness could actually kill people from monkeypox because they're not willing to, you know, basically tell the truth. And by the way, you note that many woke experts, so-called, supporting the name change even include the WHO director, the director of WHO, director general, and by the way, you note that he actually went out of his way to let the Chinese Communist Party off the hook for its central role in inflicting the coronavirus upon the world. But in other words, the idea of changing this name, monkeypox, because of wokeness, has some friends in high places.
Yeah. Well, and there's no surprise there. I mean, the director general himself, was training was done under the Chinese Communist Party, and, you know, he was a predecessor of Margaret Chan. So, you know, there is a lot of connections there as well. But yes, I mean, someone who comes from the public health department should know that if you're focused now on nomenclature, that could have a real setback to actually tackling the virus at hand, which should be our primary goal, which is saving human lives. You know, as you so nicely put, you know, we are just one human race. And if we can't look after our brothers and sisters, who have we become as humans? And that is where, you know, as someone from the public health world comes from, you know, our priorities are very misplaced here. Now, the other piece I'll mention, Jerry, and I think this is very notable, is that this is something that is what I would consider another run-of-the-mill public health issue, not something that should have raised to the level of a public health emergency, you know, raising red flags and instilling fear on Americans and people across the globe. And the primary reason it became an emergency is, as I mentioned before, the failure of the Biden administration to adequately prepare a proper public health response. We've been so heads down on COVID, making our entire country a single public health issue country, that we've forgotten about all the multitude and myriad of other public health issues we've had, notwithstanding the fentanyl crisis and overdoses, the rise in mental health claims because of the lockdown, unnecessary lockdowns. But in this particular instance, the Biden administration let millions of vaccine doses lapse. Now, this virus and this vaccine have been around for years. Okay, this is not something that's new, like COVID, that was lab created at the Chinese Communist Party's doings. This is something that's been around for a long time. And because these vaccines lapsed, meaning they expired, they had to ramp up production. Now, there was one published report that said if you change the way you administer the vaccine, you can cut the dose by 1/5 the amount that you give, thereby increasing your supply times 5. Now, the FDA refused to change that unless it was under an emergency use authorization. So the Secretary General had to declare a public health emergency in order to give the authority to the FDA to issue an emergency use authorization. So again, this is a man-made emergency. This is what would otherwise be called a public health issue, not an emergency, if these health departments were better prepared.
But I think part of the problem, too, is in calling it an emergency, it makes it seem almost as if, well, this is a disease that could affect all of us regardless of our behavior. I mean, those who don't engage in those kinds of activities, they may make you more liable to catch monkeypox, are being, in effect, told, well, you know, this could affect all of us. I mean, we should have compassion on those who it does affect, but still, your behavior does make a difference here.
Exactly. And that's why raising to the level of a public health emergency is a misnomer. And again, this is just a government contrived emergency. It's not actually an emergency. And in fact, if you go to the CDC website, which, you know, I know a lot of people have distrust based on the misinformation they've passed. But if you look at the website, it even says this is a rare disease. So if it's a rare disease and there's no imminent threat to life or limb, how exactly is this an emergency? And I think this is contextually really the question that, you know, Americans should be asking is that if this is now an emergency, literally any virus can now become an emergency, aggrandizing the federal government, aggrandizing the executive branch, and trumping the authority that the legislative branch would otherwise have. And I think as someone who comes from the health law background as a constitutionalist, this is something that's very concerning.
Well, we have about 2 minutes left in this discussion. What does monkeypox do to the body?
You probably are familiar with the pox in terms of the visceral reaction that people develop. They develop pustules that can be very painful. Listen, the good news is that the case fatality rate of monkeypox is relatively low, meaning if you get it, you write it out, you got to deal with it. It's painful. It's very painful for people that get it. But you do recover. Most people have had a good recovery from it. And then guess what? Your body develops antibodies towards this, somewhat similar to the way we had chickenpox, you know, a long time back.
Okay, can you explain what the etymology of the phrase itself is, or it's actually just a word, monkeypox, one word. What is the etymology? What does it have to do with monkeys, per se?
Yeah, not much. You know, I mean, again, this was a zoonotic disease, which simply means that it was passed from animals to humans. And again, I think the original thinking is that the virus came from monkeys. However, you know, etiology-wise, it may or may not have. We do know that other animals can pass it. We have seen transmission cases even now from humans back to animals. And that's, again, a lot of it's being uncovered and understood. But etiology-wise, you know, it's just a name that I think has stuck for, you know, the better half of half a century.
Okay, well, we have about half a minute to go or so. Why don't you recap our top story when it comes to monkeypox?
Absolutely. Listen, when it comes to monkeypox, I think there's an unnecessary alarm that's been created by the federal government. You know, again, we know that over 98% of the cases now that we're seeing have been primarily among the polyamorous gay and bisexual male community. And I would encourage those that engage in those types of behaviors to watch out and be careful. You know, I think the general public has been safe. I think this is a government contrived emergency. And I think if you take proper precautions and, you know, practice good hygiene, you know, sanitary conditions, you know, then you as a normal American citizen should be fine.
Okay, we've been talking with Rick Mehta. Thank you so much for being with us, Rick Mehta. That's spelled R-I-K-M-E-H-T-A. His website is that.com. So in other words, R-I-K-M-E-H-T-A.com. Rick, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jay.